welcome to Aerium Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 25th of November, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I'm afraid I don't have my co-host with me this week. He will be back next week. We won't be doing our Greatest Britain series this week either, but we're hoping to look at Alfred the Great next week. So we're going to have a look over the news of the last week, news that affects Britain. Mainly, there's a lot of excitement going on with the upcoming election, but there's not really anything of note that can actually be said about it. The Conservative Party released their manifesto on Sunday, and it's pretty much what you would expect. They're talking about not a lot of taxes, reducing the amount of tax that's paid. It was pointed out that the spending plan, the Conservatives' spending plan, is about 10% of the money that Labour have said that they're going to pay out for things like services, which really gives you an idea that if Labour were to actually get in, they would cause a lot of problems for the economy. I mean, last week we were talking about how the nationalisation of things such as water, gas, electric, communication, transportation, they're a good idea for a nationalist country. But the problem is that we sold them all off. And in order to buy them back now, that would cause problems for pensions and all the rest of it, because we haven't got the money there to buy it back. We would either have to just requisition it without actually paying for it, which would cause all sorts of problems, or we'd have to offer less than the market price. So a bit of a bad situation there. Hopefully Labour won't get in. I mean, even though some of their policies are good, they're going to cause problems for the country. And obviously none of them are any good if they aren't specifically concerned with just the British people, instead of allowing all these foreigners to come into our nation and make use of all the good things that our ancestors worked so hard to provide for us. There were a couple of things that Boris Johnson brought up in his speech that I thought are worth dwelling on. He mentioned identity in one part of it, talking about being proud of the English, Welsh, Scottish and Northern Irish identity, and also being proud of being together as the United Kingdom, which is, of course, nationalism. But what does he mean by English and Welsh and Scottish identity? Because he includes in that people that have no ancestry in this country. He includes in that people that have just set foot on British soil and have been given a piece of paper that tells them that they're a citizen. And he thinks that makes them English, or it makes them Scottish, which in effect is a huge insult to our identity. It's stealing our identity from us and handing it over to somebody else so that it becomes meaningless. And you couldn't just go over to China and start calling yourself a Chinaman. You would always be a British guest. You might be able to become a citizen. You might be able to become a British citizen in China. But you would certainly never become Chinese. It's only white people whose identity has been put up for grabs for anyone to just take for their own. And of course, it cuts both ways. Whenever it's criticism of anything Britain has done, they will call out colonialism, they'll call out slavery, they'll call out all the bad behaviour that Britain has done. Then it will be a question of them. And then when it's a question of things such as the NHS or the laws that we make, then it will be a question of us. And they'll be talking about us and we. So there's a certain amount of hypocrisy there in Boris Johnson talking about identity. And there was another hypocrisy shown. He brought up free speech. Britain's proud record of free speech. Tell that to the hundreds of people that are in prison for being critical of minorities and of minority groups, being critical of them in public spaces, you could say. We still do have freedom of speech in private, but even that they're trying to do away with. You think people say things on Twitter and on Facebook, and that's considered public. But they'll also have a look at what you are saying in private. A lot of these cases of the alleged National Action members rested on things that they had said in private, things that they had said in their own private chat rooms. And I guess the reason why that was allowed to be used in court is because they were alleged members of National Action, so it was the equivalent of a terrorism trial. And this is not something that Britain should be proud of, the silencing of free speech. Later on today, I will talk a little bit about Sacha Baron Cohen and the award that he's been given by the ADL and the hypocrisy there, where he's made his living out of mocking other races and other nations. And yet he thinks when people mock Jews or criticize Jews, that all needs to be silenced. That all needs to be removed. That's the equivalent of wanting to go out and kill Jews. And this is the same mentality that we have in the Conservative Party and in the Labour Party. We don't have free speech in Britain, the same as we don't have freedom of association. If you talk to people on the street, they will assume that we have free speech and freedom of association. If you tell them that there are certain groups in society that you are not allowed to criticise, they'll be really shocked at that, because they think those laws are there to prevent physical attacks against minorities in society. And if you say, well, we don't have freedom of association, they will say, well, I'm free to associate with whoever I like, but you're not free to offer a job to the race that you would like to offer the job to. You're not allowed to exclude other races or religions from renting a property from you. You're not allowed to exclude people from your business that you don't want to associate with on the grounds of race. And that's all freedom of association. And of course, when the boot's on the other foot, then it's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine for the BBC to offer jobs only to non-whites and say white people need not apply. It's okay for the fire service to do that. It's okay for the police to do that. We have instances of this. Yet people are unaware of it, and they think we have freedom of association. They think we have these freedoms in Britain that we don't have. And the fact that Boris Johnson actually mentioned free speech, that could be an indicator that he's not happy about the restrictions on free speech that we have with these hate crime laws. In actual fact, there's a case going on at the moment where an ex-policeman is suing the police in civil court for these hate incident things that they now have. Because no, they don't just have hate crimes where people are accused of a crime for making critical comments about another minority, but we have hate incidents where things don't actually meet the threshold for being a crime, and yet the police continue to record them as a hate incident and hold that on your record against you. And this ex-policeman made some comments about transgenders online, and he was reported for that, and he was investigated by the police for that. And he's taken the police force to court. And apparently the judge that was hearing it, when he heard the defense, he said, well, this is the first I've heard of this. And how did this actually get past the Crown Prosecution Service? How did this actually become a part of policing? Because it goes against our rules and laws on free speech. And of course, the reason why that managed to make its way into policing was because of the Stephen Lawrence review, into this big review that they had over a black lad that was murdered back in the 80s. And they said he was murdered by racists, and the police failed to investigate it properly. So they had a big investigation into that. And it was a rigged investigation, of course. And they had lots of experts talking about how it was all to do with hate speech, and the police needed to clamp down on hate speech, and there was institutional racism because there were more blacks being arrested than whites for knife crime and drugs, and more blacks being stopped and searched than whites, of course, because the blacks fit the witness description of somebody who's committed a crime that's been called into the police. That's why they were being stopped and searched. But they made it appear as if the police were institutionally racist. So the police have bent over backwards to appear not to be racist, which of course they never were in the first place. And by doing that, they've come out with all these hate incidents and hate crime laws. And the police are very zealous to find people that are that have these racist tendencies or anti-transgender tendencies. When of course it's just people that are noticing what's going on and are pointing out their views on it and are making their comments on it. I mean, I get demonized here for the things that I say, but I would never be saying these things to blacks that I met on the street, or, you know, I would never be talk the way that I do if I was to meet a transgender or somebody that was gay or whatever. You're just polite to people, you're courteous to people, and you talk to the people that are on your level. And that's why I say with Radio Albion, this, our content is intended for nationalists. It's not intended for the general public. It might not have the same effect on the general public that it has on nationalists. We want to set a good example. And we also want to be aware of exactly what is going on so we can help people to make the right choices in life. So you'd always be courteous to people. This idea that because somebody is critical of other minorities, they are somehow likely to go on to physically attack an ethnic minority or physically attack a sexual minority. That's just not true. Our enemies try to pretend that it is. They try to pretend that us talking about these things leads on to people physically attacking others. But the truth is, it's when you are prevented from being able to talk about something that the only way you have left to communicate is through force, because you can no longer talk. That's why it's important that we keep our alternative media going to prevent physical attacks on people. So that was the Conservative Party conference anyway. Also last week we had, or rather the Conservative Party manifesto. Also last week we had the TV debates. And I didn't watch the Boris Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn one. I knew how predictable that was going to be, and I knew that we would get the highlights of that shown to us. Of course, it was brought up that Boris Johnson made a joke about Muslims looking like letterboxes. I mean, it's so predictable and ridiculous, these accusations that they make against him for being a racist. I mean, he's part Jewish, he's part Muslim, he's non-white, and yet they accuse him of being a racist, they accuse him of being a fascist, and they bring up this joke that he made where he was actually talking about the fact that over here in Britain, people have the freedom to wear these things if they want. They have the freedom to dress up as a letterbox if they want and walk down the street. It's really rather disingenuous the way that the left continually brings this up as if it's a terrible thing that Boris Johnson said. It's just a joking thing that he said. And after this Boris Johnson, Jeremy Corbyn debate, I happened to notice very late at night, around about midnight, I guess, 12:30, they actually had Nigel Farage being questioned in front of a live TV audience. And it was so obvious that the audience had all been picked because they disliked Nigel Farage. I mean, every one of the questions that he was asked was a biased, attacking question, attacking him for his class, attacking him for taking money from the EU, attacking him for being responsible for us having the referendum. mean, this biased audiences that they have on the BBC, I mean, everybody can see it. Everyone in the whole country can see how biased they are. You know, it's great propaganda for us. The BBC are actually great propaganda for the alternative media and for nationalists, because the more they push it, the more it becomes obvious to everybody watching that this is not an unbiased platform that's giving both points of view. This is social engineering. This is a way to brainwash people into supporting the agenda that they're trying to push, the same agenda that they're trying to push in the schools, brainwashing the children into thinking diversity is wonderful and that it's great to be replaced by these non-whites. It's great to be bullied by them. It's impossible for white people to be bullied by non-whites because white people apparently have all the power. All this nonsense about white privilege. It constantly comes out of the television set and it wakes people up. So there really isn't that much to report on that's going on with the election. Hopefully it will hot up over the next couple of weeks. Now, it's been pointed out that there will be these hustings, which is when the prospective MPs go out to speak to their prospective constituencies. And this would be a great chance for people to question them in the same way that the Groypers have been questioning Charlie Kirk and TPUSA over there in America. And it is a great idea, I think, that people can go along to these hustings. And maybe some of the things that they could bring up, they could bring up the fact that Boris Johnson spoke about identity when he was unveiling the manifesto. And what about the fact that our identity has been taken from us? Saying that it could bring up free speech and say that Boris Johnson brought that up in the manifesto speech. But what about the removal of free speech in Britain? Immigration, that's another good one that can be brought up, and asking them what they're doing for white people. What are they doing for us as a group, the white community? We have all these other communities. We have the Muslim community, we have the Sikh community, we have the black community, have the gay community. What about the white community? What about representatives of the white community? Why is there nobody speaking up for us? Where is our advocate? We only have advocates in the alternative media. And of course, we get accused of being white supremacists and being racists. I think these are all good points that can be made at these hustings. So I think it's a good idea if people can get along to them and prepare questions before they go there and maybe film themselves while they're actually asking the question, so that other people can get a good idea of it and be encouraged to do the same. So hopefully we'll have some of that happening over the next couple of weeks. I think we've got 3 weeks to go until the election happens. And if the Conservatives get in, they're talking about getting Brexit done before Christmas, which a bit of a tall feat to accomplish, I think. Anyway, moving on from the election news. Last week there was a stream, a popular stream, hangout, where a popular populist figure, was talking about drugs and was basically making an equivalence between illegal drugs and alcohol. And a lot of people seemed to some people seemed to go along with this and other people didn't. And I thought, well, maybe people don't really understand the difference there, because there is a big difference between illegal drugs and alcohol. The illegal drugs, for a start, are all used by non-whites. White people developed alcohol, which is why these non-white races don't have much of a tolerance to it. And they get very, very drunk very, very easily. So white people developed alcohol in small doses. It's good for you. A glass of red wine a night, that can help keep you healthy. It's good for your heart, good for your arteries. But the drugs that the non-whites take, things like cannabis, cocaine, opium. They may not make you violent, they may not make you black out like alcohol can do, but they will still ruin your lives, but in different ways, particularly cannabis. I mean, a lot of people look at cannabis and they think, well, cannabis isn't as bad for you as alcohol. It's, you can't black out on it, you don't get violent on it. But that's not really the problem that cannabis causes. The problem that cannabis causes is that it takes over your life. And it becomes central to it. It makes you dull to what's going on around you. Your life starts to revolve around the cannabis. That starts to be central to it. The type of cannabis that you're smoking, where it came from, how it was grown, how it was made, all these ins and outs of it become central to you. And getting hold of it, you spend a lot of time getting hold of it, or you might be so involved in it that you start growing it, and it takes up a big part of your life. And then when the time that you're not spending trying to get hold of it or growing it, you're smoking it. And what do people do when they're smoking it? They just sit there in front of the television because they're quite happy to not move, and the day passes very quickly, and they pass their time in a dreamlike state where they don't notice the things that are going on around them. And worse than that, they don't even notice that they're not noticing the things that are going on around them. The worst thing about cannabis is that it will cause you to miss out on the chances that life throws you. So many chances people miss out on. Oh, we can't afford it. Why can't you afford it? Because I've got to spend £50 a week on cannabis first. Or another chance might come up. But you don't want to do that because it would mean leaving the country to go somewhere. And you don't want to take, you can't do that because you'd have to leave your cannabis at home. Maybe even just leaving the town that you're in to go and do something different. And you may not want to do that because it's so much easier to just smoke dope and listen to music or play computer games. And people don't realize it when they're on it. They'll mix up their words. They won't have the vocabulary that they used to have. Their intellect won't be as sharp as it once was. It's like the whole character becomes dulled. And they begin to believe that without the cannabis, why? What have they got that's interesting in their lives? It becomes sensual. Some people become like a Mr. Cannabis, and that's all they can talk about, all they can think about. And these are the sort of damage that it does. And it becomes very hard to give up, even though it's not physically addicting. People do become dependent on it, and they become dependent on it to sleep. And they worry that if they don't have it, they won't be able to get to sleep. And of course, they have to get some sleep because they've got to go to work in the morning. So they don't ever go without it. And they convince themselves that it would be so horrible to do without it that they couldn't possibly give up for a few days. And that's just something like cannabis, which isn't actually physically addictive. I mean, when you're talking about more addictive drugs like cocaine or heroin or these powders, they are physically addictive on top of the mentally addicting side that cannabis has. And yet when people give up cannabis, their lives are so much more improved. It's like they are sped up. Their intellect becomes sharp again. They become really active. It's like they're hyped up and on caffeine all the time. And that's just what life is normally like when you're not on cannabis. People are active and lively and do things. But the stoners and the dope heads, they forget that, and they don't realize that they're not as alert as the people that don't smoke. And if you're a nationalist, you want to be the best person that you can possibly be. You want to have live up to the full potential of a white man. And if you're smoking dope, you're never going to live up to your full potential. You are going to be limiting your potential. And it's not as hard to give up as people think. I mean, the best way to give it up is to just work really hard. Work really hard until you are absolutely tired out, totally fatigued at the end of the day, and you'll be able to sleep. And if you're doing a week or two like that, it will be worked out of your system and you won't miss it. And then you just need to keep yourself off it. I mean, getting yourself off cannabis is nothing compared to the people that get themselves off things like cocaine and heroin. Yet it seems so hard to give up at the time. And that really should give people some sympathy for the people that are on addicted to these powders, because they are physically addicting. Things like psychedelics, people might say, well, what about psychedelics? What about taking psychedelics then? They're not addictive. People don't become dependent on them. It's a different issue with the psychedelics. When you start taking the psychedelics, it's very subtle. Your morals will change. What you think is right and what you think is wrong will be subtly changed. And you'll justify things such as homosexuality, promiscuity, hedonism. All these things can be justified when you take psychedelics. And again, you'll miss out on seeing patterns. I mean, being a nationalist, a lot of it is about seeing patterns. It's about seeing patterns in among the races, patterns of behaviour, destructive patterns of behaviour. And you won't see that if you're on psychedelics. You will be more interested in the form than the function of things. I mean, artists might say, well, it's good to take psychedelics because they give inspiration for art. But nobody used to have to take psychedelics to get inspiration for art 100 years ago. Amazing artwork that used to be produced. And these people that take it, they subtly change. Their moral compass becomes warped. And they don't realize the changes that it's actually making to them. And of course, then you've got the other risks of going into a psychosis with the psychedelics, which is a much stronger risk than with the cannabis. Psychedelics can really give somebody a shock to the system, and they can never recover. You look at Syd Barrett from Pink Floyd, never recovered from his acid trip, never came back, basically. It's a huge risk to be taking psychedelics. And it's hammering the door down into a part of the mind that is supposed to be reached through natural means. It's supposed to be reached through meditation, through being in love, things like that. And what they basically do is they mimic substances that the body produces anyway. That's how all these drugs work. They mimic substances that the body produces anyway. And they produce larger amounts of them and in situations where the body wouldn't normally be producing them. So it's an unnatural way of reaching nirvana. It's a false way of reaching nirvana, and you won't learn the lessons that you are supposed to learn. And particularly with psychedelics, with the feelings that psychedelics can produce in people, those feelings are supposed to be produced by natural means through things like pushing the body to extremes in sport, for one. Maybe that's a little bit closer to things like cocaine and amphetamines. I mean, what does cocaine and amphetamines do? How do they work? Well, they mimic adrenaline. Like when the body is having a big rush of adrenaline, it mimics that. But you're supposed to get your rush of adrenaline when you're riding the motorbike, or you're going skiing, or you're riding your push bike fast, or you're running a race. It's supposed to come through sport. If it comes unnaturally, and it comes through cocaine and amphetamines, it won't be doing your body any good, and it will be giving you a false sense of superiority and a false sense of being the life and soul of the party, when in actual fact you're the bore of the party and you won't shut up. And then you've got the come down, and when you've got the come down, you're going to feel really, really, really bad. I mean, I've known people kill themselves on come downs. I've known somebody kill themselves on a come down from a cocaine and crack binge. I mean, these things are not good. And they may say, well, cannabis, it's been shown not to be a gateway drug. People don't automatically go on to these other drugs when they take cannabis. But the thing is, if you're going to get involved in that scene and you're going to be taking cannabis, the guys that you get your cannabis off are going to have access to these other drugs. And because you take the cannabis and you think, well, this hasn't really harmed me, it's not as bad as I was warned it was going to be, perhaps these other drugs are just as benign. Maybe we should try these. They're not good. They're not the equivalent of alcohol. And you look at the people that are involved that are making the money from it, and you look at the cocaine and the crack and all the crack is being sold by the Negroes at the top. All the heroin is being sold by the Pakistanis at the top. The ecstasy and the psychedelics, they come from the Jews. So a lot of the ecstasy is produced in Israel. And how do the drugs like ecstasy work? Well, they will work by making you think that the goal in life is to go out partying and to go out dancing. And you won't be bothered by the terrible things that you see happening around you. And some may say, well, that's a good thing. You don't want to be bothered by how bad the world has got. But if nobody gets bothered by how bad the world has got, then nobody's going to do anything about it. And we nationalists are the people that need to be doing something about this. You know, the people that are on these drugs, they don't notice the same things that we do. It's like they've got a haze around them. And for the people that are involved in this, that come across nationalism, you know, we need to be helping them and set them a good example and not be saying, oh, it's perfectly fine to be doing all of this and at the same time preaching nationalism. You know, nationalism is an adherence to natural law, and altering the consciousness through unnatural means is not a part of natural law. It needs to be done through natural means. It needs to be done through sport. It needs to be done through music. It needs to be done through meditation. Things like that. Not through taking substances. People that have taken substances in the past that have given them up, I mean, that's great, and they need all of our support. But people that are still taking them now and are trying to justify that, they're not helping. Because when they try to justify it, they give excuses and support to the other people that are still taking them. And people that maybe haven't taken them in the past that are thinking about it. They become a bad influence on them. We know that we live in a fallen world, and we know that most people that come to nationalism were degenerate before they became nationalists. We understand that. But once you do notice all of this and you do become a nationalist, you need to turn your back on that. You need to reject that and not continue in it, not continue in that lifestyle. Because if you do, you're a hypocrite and you're a bad example. And what you do will look bad on the rest of us. And we do have a problem with drugs in nationalism, particularly among the civic nationalists. You know, I've heard tales of cocaine use on the way to the protest or the demonstration, and the use of speed and amphetamines. And as I say, that will give you a false sense of courage. I mean, that may be one of the reasons why there tends to be more trouble at these civic nationalist demonstrations. You often hear about fights. and thing with people that are taking cocaine is they never just take cocaine on its own. They will always take alcohol with it, because when cocaine mixes with alcohol in the body, it produces a far stronger substance. I forget what it's called. It may be something like norcocaine, like you have noradrenaline, and the same part of the body that works on adrenaline to create noradrenaline, it metabolizes the cocaine with the alcohol to make the cocaine like two or three times as strong as it originally would be if they were just taking cocaine on its own. So people that are taking cocaine, they drink a lot with it, and then they're running the risk of having heart attacks, running the risk of blackouts, having fights. It was pointed out in this podcast that a few people had died around this person that was obviously still condoning drug use. And he was saying that the people that had died around him, his good friends that had died, they had died of alcohol. I don't believe that. Alcohol may have been involved. They may have been drinking when they died. But my guess would be that they were on cocaine as well. And it was actually cocaine and alcohol that they died from. It's rare that you get people involved in a drug scene that end up dying from alcohol, because they would be alcoholics then. There would be people that drank alcohol to the extent that they were likely to kill themselves. And the drug scene is different to the alcohol scene. The two don't tend to mix together. And finally, you've got heroin and the, I guess you could call them the prescription medications, things like Valium and the rest of it. And they're all dependency inducing. They will become more important to the person taking them than food, drink, and sex. And you see some of these heroin addicts, and they look like Holocaust survivors. They look like famine victims. And it's not because they're desperate to get high. It's because they need to take it in order to feel normal. And that will change a person's personality, because they have to have the drug. They can't be trusted, because they could be stealing to fund it. They could be selling stolen goods. I mean, that's another part of it. Where the drugs scene, where drugs are illegal to purchase, there's a lot of stolen goods that goes around in that scene as well. So you're encouraging the theft of things. You're encouraging people's houses to be broken into and things to be stolen and sold on. I really wouldn't think that there were that many nationalists that had heroin problems, because by the time people get involved in that, they're really not going to have much time to devote to thinking about the state of the country and the problem that the country's in and the problem that our race is in. But if people do get into that situation, then they have to understand that they will need medication in order to get off the medication that they are taking, because it could be very dangerous to try and give that stuff up. And it's also very difficult to just try it and then give it up. I think with something like heroin, just using it for a week is enough for people to become addicted. And of course, the problem with that is, I mean, somebody might take it on the Saturday night, and then they might think, well, I feel fine, I might try it again on the Wednesday night or the Thursday night. But it's actually been affecting them from that Saturday night right up through till the Wednesday, Thursday night. So in actual fact, just by taking it twice, once in the middle of the week and once at the beginning of the week, they could have taken it enough to get themselves a bit of a dependence there. Bit of an addiction issue. This is the other issue that we have here. Then we get a confusion between people being addicted and people being dependent on things. I mean, a lot of the prescription medication that the doctors put out, you will become dependent on it. You will have to take it. If you try to give it up, you will have withdrawal symptoms. That doesn't necessarily mean you are addicted to it. If people are addicted to something, they need to a compulsory feeling that they have to redose before the last dose has worn off, and a feeling that they need to increase the dose. This is why people say, well, you can become addicted to gambling. You can become addicted to chocolate, can become addicted to sex. And people will say, but that's nothing like a heroin addiction. That's because the heroin addiction also has a dependency component, where people become dependent on that drug just in order to function. So you have addiction and you have dependency. I think the way that the heroin problem should be dealt with is through prescription, through prescribing these people that are dependent upon it, that may well also have addictions to it. I think if they were prescribed it, then they wouldn't need to go out stealing to pay for it. They wouldn't need to go out prostituting themselves to pay for it. They wouldn't need to sell it to others in order to pay for it. And they could stabilize on it, and then they could give up. One of the problems that people that are addicted to heroin have in trying to give the drug up is because it's a black market product, there's no consistency to it. So they can't say, well, I'm just going to take a little bit less each time until I've gradually not taken it anymore. Because each time they purchase their drug, it's going to be a different purity. It's going to be a different strength. So they can't actually reduce. They may have reduced themselves down quite low, and then they might buy some, and it's a very, very strong purity. And then they've got a worry that they might overdose. So I think the way to deal with the heroin problem is to prescribe these heroin addicts heroin, not in an injectable form. I mean, the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, has tablet forms of all these drugs, and these people that need to inject themselves every 3 or 4 hours every day, instead of sticking these needles in their veins, they would just have to take a couple of tablets every 12 hours. And then they could reduce, they could stabilize, they would no longer be offending. There would no longer be a heroin problem in the country, because there would be no need for anybody to sell it. I mean, this is why these drugs become so insidious, because the people that sell the drugs are your friends. It's not like somebody that you've never known before will suddenly appear in outside a school or in a pub or a club and start trying to push these things onto you. It's people's friends that offer these drugs to them. And the reason why people end up selling things like heroin is because they've got a habit themselves. They've got a drug problem themselves, and they have to provide the drug for themselves. And their conscience just disappears, because they can't afford to have a conscience. If they had a conscience, then they wouldn't be able to do the heroin. And if they didn't have the heroin, they would feel like they're going to die. You know, that, and that is a possibility when people try to give this stuff up. It's very dangerous. And on top of that, now we've got the county lines problem. We've got these black gangs in the cities that are procuring youngsters and getting them to carry drugs out into the villages and out into the rural areas, where they then get a whole new generation hooked on these substances. And at first they think it's great. First they're just doing some soft drugs. But the guy that's selling them the soft drugs, the guy that's bringing it to them from the city, he will have access to these other drugs. And as I said, when people start with something like cannabis and they think, well, this is fairly benign, let's try some ecstasy. Well, that was fairly benign too. Let's try some speed. Let's try some cocaine. And then the guy will say, well, I bet you feel pretty rough, don't you, when you're coming down off that speed and that cocaine, and the purchaser, the customer, he might say, well, yeah, I do feel pretty rough. And the guy that's selling it will say, well, why don't you try chasing some of this? Try chasing a bit of brown. That will get rid of your come down. You'll feel great then. And before you know it, people fall into a trap of taking these stimulants at the weekend, taking these downers, chasing heroin during the week. And their lives are then absolutely ruined, because it will be practically impossible for them to get off this stuff. And they may say, well, I'll never inject. But a time will come where they just can't afford to keep chasing this stuff. And they have to inject it. And once they're injecting it, it becomes far more addictive than it ever was before. This rush that they get when they inject it, it's super addictive. And then they can't give up. And then their veins start falling in, and you end up with people injecting in their groin because they got no veins left after they've gone into their toes and everywhere else in their body. And it all starts with thinking that these drugs are just the same as alcohol. It's just a different format. It's a different brand. It's a different franchise. You know, the same as we say that National Socialism is just a different brand of fascism. People will think that alcohol is just a different brand of drug, and these other drugs, they just do different things, but they're all on the same spectrum, and they're not. And it's very rare that somebody will become addicted and dependent upon alcohol. And they can get help for that. Alcohol is not illegal. The very fact that these other drugs are illegal causes problems of their own, because you're then involved in the criminal underworld. It's not a health problem, it's also a crime problem. People can end up being sent to prison just for selling a bit to their friends, just the group that they have. And this is the other issue. Once you start doing it, all your friends do the same. The sensible ones, the ones that said they didn't want to get involved in it, they don't want to be hanging around you because you're a risk. Because they could get caught up in some harebrained scheme, some criminal scheme that's going on. Or you could all be busted and they could end up being arrested. And they don't want to know. And before you know it, your friends are just people that you take drugs with. There's no brotherly bond there. The brotherly bond that should be there between fellow nationalists that we have, that's not there for these drug users. They may think their friends are their good friends of theirs, but really they're just people to take drugs with. And again, that becomes very hard for people to give up. And you think, well, if I was to give this up, I'd have no friends left. Everybody else takes them. And it becomes very hard for them to give up, because their friends will come around and their friends are still taking it. And a lot of the time, these people, when they do try to give this sort of stuff up, they have to move somewhere else. And just having to move away and have to meet new people, I mean, that can seem incredibly daunting. I mean, that could be enough to get somebody to start taking the drugs again, because they will lose all their confidence when they're not taking them. Because it's unnatural. It's an unnatural way to be. This is before you think about the people that have allergic reactions to them and they end up dying on things like ecstasy or spice or whatever it is they're taking, and it's the first time they've taken it and they have an allergic reaction to it. The purity isn't there with them. Then you've got the research chemicals, the bath salts, because people are wary of getting themselves a criminal record with these illegal drugs. They think, well, we'll try some of these new ones that they haven't actually made illegal yet. And the problem with those is people don't know what the after effects of them are going to be. People don't know what the side effects are going to be. People don't even know what the dosage should be. And they end up overdosing. They end up really messed up. And this problem that we have now with spice, and that substance, it's a cannabis substitute that's far more powerful than cannabis is. And it was originally legal. And that was put on the market because cannabis was illegal. So people moved to taking this spice stuff, but where it was so much more potent than cannabis, and it really blew people's minds, and you ended up with problems far, far worse than with the people that were just smoking the cannabis. I mean, a lot of the people you see homeless on the streets, they're spice zombies, and they just take this spice so that they can make themselves numb to the world around them. I mean, why would anybody want to do this? Well, because it's glamorized, isn't it? It's glamorized by Hollywood. It's glamorized by the BBC, by the TV, by the music industry. They love to make their movies about it. I mean, I remember when Trainspotting came out. And they may say, well, that didn't glamorize drug use. It did. That glamorized the use of heroin. I know people that tried heroin after watching that film, maybe not for watching that film, but celebrated the release of the film by taking lots of heroin. I mean, that film in itself must have given rise to a whole new generation of junkies in Britain, glamorizing this stuff. I bet there aren't a lot of them left now either that were around back then that were taking it. I wonder how many were actually able to get themselves off. Heroin is not something you can use recreationally. It's not something you can just do once or twice. It's something that will take over your life. It's been a boon to the criminal gangs, because once it was made illegal, they could just smuggle this stuff into Britain and make an absolute fortune from it, because the people that were dependent and addicted upon it, they had to get it from somewhere, and they could no longer get it from the doctors. They could no longer get it from a prescription from the chemist, and they still had to get it from somewhere. So the criminal gangs moved in, and then you've got the links with the intelligence agencies as well, and the producing it over in Afghanistan and bringing it over. As I say, it's the heroin is a Pakistani, Afghan brown people's drug. They're the ones responsible for bringing it in and responsible in a lot of ways for getting people hooked on it. But most of the time, a young person's first experience with drugs comes from being handed it by their friends. You know, we have to speak out against this stuff. It was pointed out in this podcast that a lot of young nationalists, they have got themselves involved in this sort of stuff, and they don't want to speak about it because they're worried that they will be ostracized or they will be excluded from the other nationalist groups if they say what they've been involved in. But if they're going to try and justify what they've been involved in, if they want to continue doing it, then no, they don't have any business in nationalist groups. But if they want help with it, if they want to be among people that don't take it, then they should be given all the help in the world. I mean, this is the thing. If you're going to have these nationalist groups, and you've got these nationalist groups which are offline, you have to keep the drugs out of it. You can't tolerate them, because you want people to come there when they want to give up drugs, when they want to meet up with new people that aren't going to be encouraging them to smoke a spliff or snort a line or take a pill, because they will be needing to leave behind that group of people that take drugs, and they'll be looking for a group that doesn't. And the nationalist groups that we have that are offline, they need to be those sort of people, that these people who want to put their lives right, that they can come to for help and understanding. You know, the people that used to take drugs in the past, you know, they need to talk about it and encourage others to get themselves off it. Not say that it's the same, just the same as alcohol, and try to justify it and say, well, you can continue doing that and continue to get involved with these nationalist groups because it will pollute the nationalist group. It will corrupt the nationalist group. You know, we have to have a zero tolerance to this within our organisations and within our groups. Not zero tolerance to people that have checkered pasts. I mean, people that genuinely wish to improve their lives and stop doing degenerate things and harmful things, they need all the help they can get. And we need to be there for them, but we need to watch that they're not trying to justify what they did in the past or continue doing it. Anyway, I did have loads of other news stories that I was going to talk about today, but I do think it's important to bring up this subject of drugs. As I say in this stream, it was, you know, there were two or three things that came out really, that there are some people that are still taking them that feel worried about mentioning it because they think they'll be excluded. And there was also this idea that drugs are the same as alcohol and there's some kind of equivalency that can be said about the two. And also just a general not being very well educated about these things that I wanted to address. And I hope that the people that were listening to that stream and the people that were involved in it, I hope they get themselves off these things and manage to disentangle themselves from them and see the harm that they cause. Because a lot of the time it becomes, oh, well, it's just cannabis. But as I said, the cannabis will dull your wit, it will dull your intellect, it will take away your inspiration and your drive and your drive to get somewhere. And that will to power, I mean, National Socialism was all about that will to power. And cannabis will sap that will, it will take that willpower away from you. And it will rob you of the best years of your life when you should have been the most active and the most out there and the most adventurous. And instead, you'll just have been sat there living your life through computer games on a screen instead of going out there into the world and having these real life adventures and all these chances that life will throw you, because life will throw you chances. You know, we do have such a thing as providence, and you will miss providence. If you're on drugs, you won't see what providence is trying to tell you, and you will miss out on the chances that you really, in some instances, I've seen people miss out on chances that could have really changed their lives around, and they missed them out because it was more important to them that they took drugs. And just like they say with alcohol, that if you're an alcoholic, you have to give it all up. You can't just have one drink because it will turn into more. And it's the same with drugs. You know, if you give drugs up, you can't say, well, I've given up, but I'm just going to smoke the occasional spliff, because you'll just fall back into being a dope head. It's the same with the powders as well. You have to give the whole lot up, and your life will be massively improved by doing so. Your intellect will sharpen again, particularly with cannabis. People don't realize how dull their intellect becomes when they're on the cannabis. I mean, even to not being able to pronounce words, getting your grammar mixed up, getting your speech jumbled up, the short-term memory loss, all of these things affect people that are on cannabis. Give it up for a week or two, and you'll suddenly be sharp and alert, and people will think you're on Red Bull, or they'll think you're on lots of coffee or something, because you'll be so lively and your adrenaline will be going again, and all your senses will be there again, and you'll be a much better person, and you'll be much more in a position to help others, and much more in a position to grab hold of whatever life throws at you. I mean, we've got, I can think of two people off the top of my head that are in our chat room that have been involved in the drugs world before and have given it up. We got somebody that quite involved in soft drugs, and they've given it up. Someone that was quite involved in the hard drugs, and they've given it up. you know, if people want help with this, then they can always drop by the chat room and talk to us. You know, I do understand that it's a big thing for people to give these things up. You know, it's a big thing to give cannabis up, even though it's not physically addictive. People still become dependent upon it like a crutch in their lives. And we want to encourage people to stop taking these things, stop taking these harmful things. You know, maybe one of the reasons why people take it is because they've been hit with so much of this white guilt, so much guilt for being a white man. And they think that their lives don't actually have any value. They don't have any value, and they might as well just take all these drugs and numb themselves to it. Well, you do have value. If you're a white man, you have value. You're one of only a few left. If you think back at all these nations that used to be white, India, Egypt, Assyria, Phoenicia, none of them are there anymore. The only ones left are the Europeans. We are the only ones left. We do have value. We have masses of value. Every one of our ancestors chose their partner wisely from within their own tribe, and we are the end result of that. We're the most valuable people in the world. Why we would want to dull ourselves and harm ourselves when, you know, we have a life out there, we have a pathway out there to a life, which is nationalism. You know, that should be inspiration enough for people to want to give up the cannabis and these other drugs. And we need to provide a place where they can come to get away from all of that, where they can be themselves without having to be on cannabis, without cannabis being the central thing that they talk about. You need to give them a chance to be themselves and to show them that their characters do have value. This is the other thing. Once you get off the drugs, your character will come through again, and you'll find out who you really are. So many people, they lack the self-confidence. They lack the confidence to be themselves, and they don't really know who they really are anyway, because the cannabis has taken over. All these other drugs have taken over. Get off the drugs. Be a good nationalist. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast today. I wasn't intending to talk about this. I did have these other news stories, but I think it's something that needed to be said, and I think it is applicable to Britain in particular. We have these drug problems, and it was a British stream that this discussion was being had in. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back next week with Max Musson with more Aryan Britannia for you. So until then, I hope you all have a great week ahead of you.